Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today I'm airing an interview with director Amanda Friu, who is here directing title of show. Amanda thought she wanted to be an astrophysicist and held on to that belief until a teacher told her actually she should be in theater. Listen to this story. It's adorable. It's instructive. It's charming. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you are. It sounds simple, but in fact, it turns out that for most of us, it's the most difficult thing to do. It turns out that many of us, maybe even most of us, have grown up thinking that there's something terribly wrong with us, something not good enough. And so we're pretending not to be who we are, but someone else, the person other people would like, want, hire, love, protect, keep. As a psychotherapist, of course, I believe that this not liking who we are thing happens in childhood, in our family of origin, at school. Unfortunately, it happens so often at school. Our religious teaching, our cultural teaching convinces us that something about us, what we look like, what we sound like, how we sneeze, how we laugh, how smart we are, how fast we are, how healthy we are, whatever it is unattractive, is not what they want, is not what a good person should be, is not what God wants. Something about us makes us undesirable. And that makes us want to pretend to be somebody we're not. And so, unfortunately, so many of us do precisely that. And in our zeal to pretend to be someone else, we quite often forget who we really are. And in having done that, we deny, block, forget really important things about ourselves. Our spontaneity, our joy, our creativity, our curiosity, our assertiveness. These things get buried over and over and over again. Having to pretend that you are not who you are, having to lose the access to these important things, it makes life less delightful, happy than it could be. To make this point, I interview people who make their living or their life within art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And today's interview with Amanda Frio is an example of someone who knows who she is. It's a lovely story of someone who thought she was one thing and then was told by a teacher, and this is the other way in which teachers can benefit us, that she was a performer, an actor, a theater person. And it turns out that the teacher was right and Amanda was wrong. And although it took her a while to embrace that, she has in fact embraced it. And she is here in Sarasota directing a show. So listen to how Amanda went from a little girl who was sure she wanted to be an astrophysicist to a woman who knows who she is and is willing to be that even when it is not always easy. Here now is Amanda. Okay, I'm here with Amanda Frio in a conference room at the Oslo, and I am here with Amanda because she is directing title of show for the conservatory, which will open...
It's February 18th.
Okay, so I'm explaining to Amanda, I interview people who make their living or their life within art. I'm assuming the art is directing, but is
mostly,
it larger than that?
Yeah.
Mostly. What else?
These days, puppetry is the other aspect of that. Yeah, I do a lot of building for a puppeteer named Basil Twist, primarily. I used to do more for other people. Now that I'm doing more directing, I'm still doing some puppetry.
So okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you remember the very first time that performance, puppets, acting, being looked at, any of that, struck you, drew you, occurred to you?
You know, my grandfather used to tease me that before I discovered theater that I always loved dance. Like, I'm the youngest of five kids, and they used to take me to my siblings' band concerts. My parents had this rule that everybody had to learn to play some sort of instrument. And I would dance. I was a kid dancing in the aisle, you know, that, like, everybody else is taking pictures of and probably embarrassing my siblings a great deal. So, like, I kind of don't remember it ever not being part of my life.
Performance.
Yeah, performance and music and dance, sort of a messy combination of things. And I made puppet shows in my house and that sort of thing.
How old are we talking here?
4 or 5. I mean, like, really little. But I also was really, really academic. I loved math and science.
Okay,
this is going to connect to that. I thought I was going to be an astrophysicist for a very long time. But when I was in high school, I think the big moment for me was I had a teacher who pulled me aside and was like, I don't know why you think you're going into physics. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, I think you need to have a career in theater. And I was like...
How old were you?
I was 16.
Okay, wait.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but while there was a spontaneous acting out thing where you would dance or you would make puppet shows or you would do things that called other people to look at you.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Right.
Even while that was going on and that was clearly integral, right?
Uh-huh,
it was
uh-huh.
clearly so essentially part of you. You had this idea that you were going to be an astrophysicist because you liked those subjects?
I loved math and science. I mean...
But astrophysicists, that's a very specific thing.
I don't know where I picked that up. Like, I remember coloring a picture in second grade about what I was going to be when I grew up, and it was, like, my office at NASA, and I had on, like, a white jacket, and there was, you know, the shuttle in the background.
So by the second grade?
Yeah.
And you don't remember where that happened?
Yeah, I have no idea where that came from.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And then when I got into high school and started studying physics, I was like, oh, yeah, this is it. This is what I want to do. And I think part of it was, I mean, it was the intellectual challenge. And, you know, meanwhile, I was doing all of this theater
that
stuff.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
So did you join the
I
drama
studied,
club or whatever?
Well, we didn't have a lot of theater, per se, in my hometown. We had a huge music program. So I sang and I ended up playing marimba for a long time.
I was just going to ask, what was the instrument you learned?
Yeah, I played piano a little bit, starting when I was little, and then joined bands. At the same time, I got braces, and so the clarinet didn't go very well, and switched to xylophone and marimba because it was an easy sort of, you know, change from piano.
It's close.
Yeah, it was really close. So that was like fifth grade, and that was about the same time I was in my first play.
What was it?
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and that was like the first like really public sort of play.
Okay,
and
how did you get in it?
How did I audition?
You did audition.
I did audition.
Okay, so
yeah.
So this is staying constant, even though you are saying I'm not doing this over here. You haven't stopped doing that other thing.
No, right? And I loved it, and it was...
Do you remember the performance, that performance?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was really hot, and it was in this, like, this community center, no air conditioning, and it was in August, and we had to wear fur coats, because, you know, they go in
there, right.
And I just remember this giant barn fan, but I also remember my siblings were all much older than I was, so they were sort of out of the house, and I would ride my little pink Huffy bike to the community center because it was really close.
So wait, so this was not in school. This was
no,
in the community.
No, this was like a community theater group.
So you're how old when we were in the fifth grade, you say?
Yeah, 10.
Yeah, okay, good.
That's
and you said to your mommy, I'd like to audition for this play at the community center.
Yep,
right? And she said,
great.
Good. And she took you down there, or you rode down there?
Oh,
I probably
went by myself, because it was, I mean, like 5 blocks away or something.
Wow.
But I remember riding my bike all the time, you know, no cell phones or anything. And I wanted to do everything. Like, I was in the show, but, like, they would be painting the set afterwards. And I was like, can I help? And my poor mother, like, I must have given her heart failure, because I would stay after rehearsal and do anything they would let me do. And, you know, I feel like maybe once or twice she, like, showed up going, why are you not home, you know? But I would, you know, as long as somebody would let me do it, I would do it. And...
So you were the last one to know, apparently.
Yeah, I was completely the last one to know.
The community theater thing.
Yeah.
Do you know how you knew about it?
I don't. I have no
idea. It is kind of... It's a stretch. I mean, you had to find out about
it.
You had to know when the auditions were. You had to intend to go. You had to...
It was a really small town with population about 5,000. It's probably in the paper, I'm guessing.
You were 10. Were you reading the paper?
Oh, probably.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it was like one of those things where like the whole community is sort of centered around the school district. So, you know, like all the school stuff was in the paper and that sort of thing. And
okay, all right, so you get this role,
mm-hmm.
and you remember it really clearly,
even though it's a long
time ago now,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And do you continue to audition for them?
Yeah, I did. I acted in anything anybody would let me do all the way through high school, some into college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did this teacher... who tells you who you are, know that?
Number one, she's a very smart lady, and she's now a very dear friend of mine, so that's kind of an amazing blessing. You know, I think that I did several shows a year in any capacity I could.
In school as well?
They did more musicals in school, and so I wasn't a great singer, but I could sing just well enough to, like, get myself in the chorus or whatever, and I was in show choir, and it was my choir director, actually. And I had been in show choir for a couple years at that point, and had done all the musicals and all the plays, and we did a madrigal dinner every year, so, like, we did, like, you know, sang all sorts of, you know, madrigal songs, and, like, transformed the school, and there was a part in the madrigal dinner that was the head jester, and the head jester was sort of like the master of ceremonies, and the guy that had played the head jester the year prior to that had gone away to Interlaken for the summer and not come back. And I was sitting in choir one day, and they were like, well, we think we're just not going to have a head jester this year because of it. And I was like, well, that seems silly, you know, and I had my little form, and I was kind of shy about a lot of that stuff. And I remember thinking, you know, we had to put, like, what do you want to do down on it? And I was like, I checked that little head jester box. And I don't think I had any idea what I was getting myself into. And the girl that was, like, the student director that year was like, I heard that you wanted to be the head jester. This might be perfect. And I was like, whoa, what's happening? You know, like, and the next thing I knew, I was doing that. And that was, it was very strange for it to be a sophomore. It was not very common at that point for it to be a girl.
Was it scripted?
Some of it was scripted. Some of it wasn't. I was scared out of my mind. Like, I had, and I think because it wasn't all scripted, because it was like a 3-hour event sort of thing, I think that was scary to me, the not scripted part. And, you know, after we finished the second, it was like 2 performances on a weekend, and they actually, like, served dinner with it, you know. And I remember her taking me, it was like right after that, probably that Monday when she sat me down, and I was like, crazy. I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, like, who tells you that? You know, you're like, I'm going to be an astrophysicist. They're like, no, actually, why don't you go into the arts? That's a great idea. And then that following, I guess.
Well, wait a second. Yeah. I want to stop you because I like to make this point whenever it comes up, and it comes up very often, the impact that schools and teachers can have.
Huge.
Huge. Huge. On both sides. This is not the only time I've heard this story.
Yeah.
You know, where, actually, the one that I like the best is a young man who had no interest in being in theater, but he was in some play, mm-hmm. and he was at home playing basketball, throwing balls into the hoop, and the shop teacher, I think, was walking by, shop teacher, who didn't actually live on his street. And he said, you know, I saw you in that play, and you were great. I guess you're going to be an actor.
Oh, that's so funny.
And this guy's like, Deus ex machina, you know? Right, you know? And the kid said, really? And he is?
It's so funny.
It's, but that, and the other thing also, they can knock you down. They can. So I like to make this point as much as possible. If you're a teacher and you're listening, be careful because you have a lot of power, right?
You do have a lot of power. And I think, you know, she planted the seed in my head, but I think I had probably at some point been like, oh, I'm going to be an actor before that, but not in a really serious way. You know, it was never something that I was like, yes, I'm going to do this. And I think part of it was because when you're a good student, too, everybody assumes
you're going to be something like that.
Yeah.
You're going to.
And that if you're not, that it's a waste.
Yes, yes, yes. That's right. So this woman understood that it wasn't a waste to be who you are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in an ironic way, she saw what she saw in you, because she was clearly right, because here you are, right?
Right.
And she, what, supported it, embraced it, labeled it?
Labeled it, gave me a number of opportunities that I never would have sought out.
Oh, so tell me about that.
So I, you know, in my weird, like, being interested in everything, I really wanted to be in charge of costumes. Like, that was I was like, yes, I get to go play dress up. She apparently had other ideas, and I guess it was the following year, there was a small series of events. The first was we had a show choir rehearsal, and there was a girl that was singing a song for a solo competition. And all of a sudden, I hear her going, somebody find Amanda for you. Where's Amanda for you? And I was like, uh-oh. What's going on? And she was like, sit down. I was like, okay. She was like, watch her. Tell her how she needs to tell this story more clearly.
Oh, my.
And it was a senior, and I was a sophomore, and was like,
This is directing 101.
So this was directing 101, you know, and it was a song from Into the Woods, and I didn't know the musical, and so I was sort of just taking what I could from the text and going, okay, well, you know, maybe if you try this and whatever.
Do you remember anything that you actually said?
I think I remember talking to her about it being a lullaby and, like, trying to console. She was trying to console somebody. But, of course, I had no idea what had just happened in Into the Woods. Like, I didn't know people had died, you know. It was not, didn't know that. And so I have vague memories of that. And then sometime not long after that, she walked up to me in the choir room she asked me if I was interested in student directing the musical that spring. And I had a series of ankle injuries in high school, and so I had not been able to dance as much as I had hoped, and I was like, well, let me think about it, because I kind of really want to dance the musical because I hadn't for the last 2 years, and I finally had surgery and gotten that fixed. And she was like, okay. And so, like, I went away, and I think I had sort of decided that I really would rather dance the musical. And then she walked up to me one day in the choir room and, like, handed me a South Pacific script and said, we need to talk about when we're having auditions, and she just walked away. So, like, I still tease her. I was like, you know, I've never agreed to do that show. Like, so I, all of a sudden, I was directing South Pacific.
Wow. This is quite remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, this is beyond. This is above and beyond, right?
And then we had our directing lesson. You know, at some point, you know, after I was like, well, I guess this is happening, I remember standing in her office, and she was like, so how do you think you're going to go about doing this? And I don't remember what I said, like, some sort of two-sentence answer. And she was like, okay, that seems like a good place to start. And, you know, it wasn't, I wasn't doing, like, the design and all of that stuff. Like, that had sort of been spelled out. But my high school, they literally took a high schooler and said, okay, you go stage this entire musical. So there was a choreographer that came in and did that stuff, but I staged all of South Pacific. Like, I would find that intimidating now. But I think I was just too oblivious to be afraid of it.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, I didn't know.
And that's when to do it.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, even the next year, I ended up doing the musical the next year as well. And that was different. That I knew what I was getting myself into, and so I think that was scarier in some respects than the first one.
Okay, so she tells you this, and she presents you with all of these opportunities to see what it's going to be like, right? And at some point, do you say to yourself in high school, well, I guess it isn't astrophysics?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fast. We hadn't even gotten into tech for South Pacific, I think.
And when you already...
Yeah. When I knew. I remember being in this, like, old cruddy theater at my high school, and the girl who was playing Nellie had never had a speaking role in a musical before. And I was coaching her, and I think it was I'm as Corny as Kansas in August, and I kind of love that song. It's, like, so obnoxious and wonderful. And she... I was trying to get her to run up on a, and, like, jump onto a box, you know, that there was this moment, right, where she's feeling everything sort of be overwhelming, and I remember coaching her through all of it, and just having this moment of being like, oh, I'm in my own skin, you know, and feeling like I was articulate and making sense, and somewhere in all of that, physics became something that I would do, and this was something I was.
Yes.
You know?
Wow. Yes. This is me. This
yeah.
is me, right.
Yeah, this is me. And I think that I was more shy than most people knew I was at that point in time. And I was kind of awkward. And it finally felt like, oh, yeah, like this is where I fit into this picture.
I think what you're saying is that at the same time that you have this recognition, this is me, there's a shyness about... What? Admitting to it? Embracing
it?
Well,
I think it was more that I was like a way of overcoming the shyness. Like, it was a situation in which I had no problem telling people who were older than me what to do. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it was just, oh, well, it just made sense. You know, where normally I in a social situation, I probably would have been significantly more uncomfortable with the same people. So
do you think it's because... You believed that you knew what you knew?
Yeah, I think so. Because I knew at that point that I'd done a lot more theater than most of the people I was working with, so it was somewhere where I felt really comfortable. Like it wasn't foreign to me. So even though directing was new, it was still a situation where I felt really at home.
Were there acting classes at all?
No.
Nothing.
No.
This is all spontaneous. This is all instinct.
Yeah.
This is all natural.
Yeah, I had done like some like creative drama stuff when I was much younger. Or like, you know, let's do a play, sort of summer things. But I'd never taken an acting class.
Okay, so sometime in your senior year, you make the leap.
Mm-hmm.
You have the recognition. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do about it?
Well, first of all, being the rather careful, well-behaved teenager I was, I didn't say I'm going to go be a director. I was like, I'm going to teach theater.
Of course.
Right? That seemed like the logical. Right. And so when I was applying for colleges, I was looking for somewhere that I could get certified to teach high school theater. And I found McAllister College, where I ended up going, was one of the places I was looking at. And they had a theater certification, whatever, which is great. Coincidentally, when I got to McAllister, they got rid of the certification. So that was sort of the next step in that journey to, oh, maybe I'm not going into education, you know, because it was happened once I was already there. Minnesota had changed all the requirements
at that point. You know, it's like the universe is just telling you.
It kept going, Amanda, no.
No, exactly.
You're not going to do that.
Right, exactly. That's amazing. So you're there, and this thing that you thought you were going to have is not there.
Yep.
So then, what are you, a theater major?
So I was a theater major, and I, again, had my fingers in all the pots. I did a lot of acting early on. My sophomore year, I had been working for the janitorial staff at the college for my work study, and somehow I always ended up cleaning the windows in the theater building. Like, that was my, you know, whatever. And one day, the design professor looked at me, and he was like, okay, enough of this. I think it was the day that I had to clean their water fountains, but he was like, this is no more. And I got hired to work in the scene shop. So I paid my way through college building sets.
You didn't go looking, right?
No, didn't go looking. That showed up on my doorstep. I actually wanted to work in the costume shop. It all goes back to my always wanting to be in the costume shop and everybody being like,
No. It goes back to my always wanting to be whatever it is you wanted to be, and somebody saying, no, this is what you are. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. So I worked in the scene shop. I completed the entire acting track. I completed the entire directing track and the design track. So short of my thesis project, I could have gone any one of those ways. And I actually went up for my junior review in college, and it turned out that nobody knew what I was majoring in. They all thought that I was in a different...
Oh, how funny.
In a different track, which I thought was really funny.
What did you do?
I did a directing track. Mm-hmm. I studied abroad in London and had done a classical acting program.
When was that?
2001.
Fall. No. I mean,
that would have been in my
So you took a year
junior
off?
Year, my fall of my junior year. I took a semester and went to London.
And why did you do that?
A, because I wanted to travel, and B, because I was like, oh, I'm going to go do a hardcore conservatory semester, because I was still acting a lot at that point.
And were you not sure what the...
I mean, I knew I wanted to direct, but not necessarily not do the other things.
Yeah, okay. So did you go looking for this, or did this...
Yeah, I went looking for it.
You said, I'm looking for a hardcore acting something, you found this thing in London and said, oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Yep.
Right.
And I was also, simultaneously, I did a minor in dramatic lit. So I was really into the digging and the, you know, pulling things apart. And I was like, well, this makes sense. I'll go do a classical program in London. And while I was there, it was a lot of acting, and I got bored.
Ah, yeah.
That was the thing that made the turn, I think, was that physics brain was like, this is not enough. And when I got back from London, I did very little performance after that. I did some, but it wasn't the priority.
It helped you make the choice, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you did the directing track,
yep.
You did your thesis or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And you graduated
with a BA in theater and a focus on directing.
Okay, so then what did you do?
Then I had no idea what to do, because I wasn't used to having to go find it myself.
No, of course.
So that was a little problematic. And I remember asking people. I was like, well
what do I do now?
What do you do when you graduate? Like, I was like, there's no path.
Mm-mm.
And particularly as somebody who thrived in an academic system, it was like this big world.
Thrown into the ocean.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got pretty lost for a while, I think. I did a company management internship at Barrington Stage, which actually kept coming back. Barrington Stage has played a role numerous times in my life. But I was a company and house management intern, and I never house managed the entire time I was there. Like, it was one of those funny things, because it turned out that they were behind in the scene shop, and I knew how to build things. So I ended up in the scene shop a lot. I think I was a dresser on one of the shows. So I did get that costume thing in there eventually. And I did some company management stuff, and I ASM'd a play while I was there.
You what?
Assistant stage managed a play. And then I wasn't sure, like, now what? You know, because that's a summer. It's like, okay, well, this is great, because now I at least sort of understand a little bit about the professional world, whatever. And one of the directors there was like, you know, we're looking for an ASM at my theater company, like a permanent position. And I did not come from a family with lots of money, and so it was like all of the job. Yeah, I was like, job. And I was also thinking, I can't do an unpaid internship. That was not an option. And I knew I wanted to get in somebody else's rehearsal room, because I had never assisted anybody at that point. And I was...
No, you were always the director.
I know. I was like, I'm just going to do this. Yeah. And so I was like, well, if I stage manage, I get paid and I get to watch other people.
Right. You get to learn.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a class. I mean, it's like a... Right?
Exactly.
Okay, good. So you took the job.
So I took the job. And I moved to Hartford, Connecticut. So that was unfortunate. It turns out I'm a really terrible stage manager, so that's the other part of it.
What's wrong with you? I mean, what is it that you don't do?
I get really bored.
This is why
it's that bored thing again.
It's the acting,
you know.
That's right.
I was like, you know, and I think awesome stage managers have this weird ability to, like, be really bored and pick up all the details at the same time.
Right.
It's like a special focus thing that I did not have. So I was pretty miserable. And I stayed one season, and Hartford wasn't really my place either. And so I was brainstorming the whole time, like, how do I get out of here?
And what do I do?
And what do I do? And I was like, well, maybe I should try doing some more acting. That seems like an okay idea. So I actually ended up auditioning for, and at like one of the spring auditions where you can audition for a bunch of places, I don't remember which one it was, got cast in a production of Richard III that was touring New England.
Yeah. Have you had much Shakespeare experience?
Well, yeah, because all of that classical acting in London.
Oh, in London, of course.
Yeah,
no,
so actually,
right.
I mean, I was probably more trained as a classical actor than anything else.
Right.
And so I actually played a little boy in that, one of the little princes, and then, like, the first murderer or something, you know? So I romped around New England one summer and, like, got to play with swords, and that was kind of fun because, I mean, I'm the girliest looking girl ever, so, like, I never got to do that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, right.
So that was fun. So I did that. And about the same time, I also auditioned for a puppet theater. So I had assumed that at some point I would go back to graduate school. And I had been on a search committee for a faculty member in undergrad, so I kind of knew that there were certain things that you needed some specialties, right? And
right.
I was like, well, I'm really good at mask performance, and I loved building masks and sculpting them and that whole thing. And so I was like, well, puppetry seems like the obvious next step, right? And they were looking for somebody with mask experience that they would train to puppeteer.
Now, didn't you say that you had done puppets as a kid?
Yeah, but I'd forgotten about that. Like, I completely forgot that I had done this as a kid.
Amazing.
My mother kindly reminded me of that later.
Oh, by the way, Amanda.
She had them, too. She was like, here, you may want these.
Oh, my God.
And they're totally ghetto. They're, like, you know, made out of socks and, like, dirty socks, no less. They're not even clean.
Of course. We're going to give you clean socks. Okay, good. So
yeah.
Now you applied for a...
Mm-hmm.
Internship or
to be a company member. It was like, I mean, it was a small, like a tiny, like touring puppet theater.
I see. So, but they were willing to take you on and train
mm-hmm.
you because you had some skills,
mm-hmm.
right? But they were going to pay you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. So they taught you?
Yes. The company was in one of its last few years when I was there, so things were falling apart a little bit. I actually got hired as their technical director too, which I was like, what is happening? So I was the technical director and a puppeteer, and I also did some mask performance. And I traveled all over. We went to Alaska. We went all sorts of amazing places and venues. And but it was hard. I mean, I worked my butt off that year because it turned out nobody else really had technical skills. And so I was maintaining the puppets and the scenery and the all of the whatever. But I discovered that I actually liked building puppets better than I liked performing with them.
Yet again.
Yeah, it was like I took another step back from that. But that was a really crazy year.
Well, you know, what it sounds like, and you can tell me if I'm all wrong here, is that you like process.
I love process.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And acting, once you've established the role, is really about repetition.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to keep finding
it's an amazing
yourself.
Skill if you develop it well.
Right. But it's not about, the process is all about getting to that. And then you don't really have process anymore.
Right.
But you really like ongoing.
I love process.
Yeah, right.
I love the problem solving. I think directing is like, yeah, I mean, putting, you know, puppetry and directing next to each other, the parts of them I like, they're both, you know, figuring out how the, with
the
puppetry, it's like figuring out how the mechanism works, mm-hmm. right? And with puppetry, it's like, okay, this show has these problems. How do I solve those? But yet, you know, and that's the physics thing again. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's putting that added layer of how do I do this beautifully?
Yes, yes, yes. And how do I do this so that other people get it, understand mm-hmm. it, get something from it? The physics is not about that.
No.
I mean, unless you're going to build a rocket.
Right.
You know, the physics is all going on in your head. And
right, yeah, it's,
you're not
it's,
sharing it
it's not a social
right?
thing the same
no,
way.
No, but yeah. But, yeah. So, okay, so what it sounds like, again, to me, is that all of these experiences were helping you to really discover Amanda.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because I think it's like, you know, my teacher was like, ah, yes, director. And I knew director, but I also was, it was really hard for me to take that in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was. That was definitely my, I had to figure it out after somebody else figured it out.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about is that in that moment when you're directing this young woman who's doing, you know, I'm a cockeyed optimist.
Right? Exactly.
Right? You have the awareness, this is who I am.
Yep.
And it seems to me that in the puppeteer thing, you have the same thing.
Yep.
That this is me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at home here.
Yep.
I'm at peace here or whatever
yeah.
that is, right. So, okay, so now do you stay with this company until it falls apart?
I didn't. It was very stressful, so I was like, okay, this needs to be done.
And anyway, got what I needed there.
Got what I needed there,
or not.
Yeah. So at that point, I went back to Barrington Stage, actually, as a teacher and director for one of their, like, summer programs. So, I spent the summer there. And then, again, I hit that, like, well, now what? You know, what do I do from here? And I knew I wanted to live in New York at some point, but it was more, it had nothing to do with theater. It was I'd gone there with my grandfather when I was a kid, and was like, oh, my God, I really want to live here. And I was dating somebody at the time who was in graduate school at Yale, but he hates New York. If I go to New York now and we're still together when he's done,
he's going to leave.
I figured that at that point I'd have it out of my system, you know,
I wouldn't have skipped out on New York.
So I moved to New York having no idea what I was going to do. And the puppet thing, we ended up rehearsing in this dance studio in this tiny town in western New York that was owned by a former Rockette who had met her husband at Radio City. He fixed the pipe organs. So when I moved to New York and I didn't have a job, he was like, hey, you want to come work for me? So my first job in New York was fixing pipe organs. My friends were like, where do you find this stuff? I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
It just kind of happened. So I spent, and I was supposed to work at Radio City doing the Christmas Spectacular that year, working on the pipe organ. But it happened to be the year of the musician strike.
Mm.
So I took a temp job. Because I, you know, the pipe organ business came up dry that year, and took a temp job and had been there, was there for maybe a couple months, and I got a phone call from the artistic director at Barrington going, hey, we just lost our director of education, and you know the program better than anybody else, and you're way too young to really be doing this job and probably not super qualified, but do you want to come do this for a little while? I started splitting time between New York and Massachusetts. I went up thinking it was going to be a month or two. Stayed a lot longer than I thought. I ended up being not quite a year. I had that moment of being like, I'm hiring other people to do what I want to be doing. And so I was like, that was when I started going, okay, no, I need to start being the one to figure this out instead of just taking whatever comes. And that was a lot harder.
The image I have is there's this sort of wave, and it's just going, and you're going and going until the moment that you say, okay, fine, I'll try and do this myself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it sounds like if you had not made that decision, the universe would have continued.
Yeah, I would have just gone a different direction. Right. And I was really good at what I did. So they were like, you sure you don't just want to stay permanently? I was, you know, again, I got really bored, and I didn't want to be pushing paper. And I think it's hard, because I was always a really well-behaved kid, and so, like, I think I tend to fall into that stuff pretty easily.
Right.
And so, and again, you know, it was that saying, I am an artist, I am a director, was hard. You know, I think it was still being like, oh, I'm supposed to be a scientist, you know what I mean? Like, and I've talked to other people who say the same thing, that getting to that point where you're like, I'm a director, that you can introduce yourself that way.
Yeah.
And it was years. So I went back to New York.
And what did you do?
I did a lot of office work. But while I was at Barrington, still, it was towards the end of that, I needed some creative something, and I responded to a Craigslist ad about, like, a puppetry internship. And I was like, well, I have this full-time job. On the weekends, I could go do that. I'm coming back to New York anyway. If I spent one day of my weekends building puppets, maybe that would give me enough, you know, sort of creative fodder to get through. And so I went in, and they were like, oh, you have more skills than most of our interns do. And I was like, oh, whatever. I have a full-time job. I just want to come and, like, do this. And so they were like, okay, cool. Come and work on the show. And I was telling a friend of mine about it, and they were like, well, Basil Twist, he's kind of a big deal. And I was like, oh, really? Like, I had no idea. I was just, like, so clueless. And I ended up hitting it off really well with them, and I've now done work with them on and off since, I guess that was 2006.
Wow.
So yeah, and it goes in phases where, like, I ended up doing a bunch of shows sort of in that first period, and then I did a bunch of work this past year. But, yeah, so that...
Again, worked
in an office, but sort of
yet
went back
again,
and forth.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, just...
Without intention.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep, without intention.
Without knowing, right? Okay.
Completely.
So, at some point, though, you have solidified the directing thing. So how did that happen?
I mean, at that point, I knew that was what I wanted to be doing, very much so. And that was what was frustrating when I was at Barrington, was that I wasn't doing that. I sat in on rehearsals. One of the, Joe Calarco, if you've ever met him, is a delightful director, let me sit in on rehearsals for one of his shows while I was doing that. So I'd, like, go to the office, and then I'd go sit in on rehearsal, and then I'd, like, go teach something. I don't think I slept at all that summer. And so it was, like, trying to get it in any way I could, and still struggling with how do I pay my bills, and how do I do this. And at some point I realized, okay, well, this just isn't going to happen. You know, this thing that just keeps falling in my lap sort of stopped falling in my lap. And that was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it still is a challenge, I think. So I guess I just kept applying for weird little things. Like, I remember being a really big deal when I got to do my first, like, 10-minute play in New York. And I had no idea how to find my way through that, like, how you make the path. Like, if I know exactly what the steps are to get somewhere, awesome. Like, that's easy. But
So you didn't go to a graduate school where you would have had a group of people who you would have graduated with, all of whom would have, you didn't have any of that.
Right.
You didn't have a community, really.
Right.
Whew. Boy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was, I didn't, I mean, I didn't know very many
people
in theater.
You know, that is how most people do it.
Yeah, and at some point when I was in New York, I did apply for graduate school. I went through that process a couple times and was, like, the waitlist candidate. And a friend of my family was the head of one of the directing programs. And I went out to visit there, and she was like, call me after you visit and tell me what you think. And I went. I knew it wasn't the place for me.
Mm-hmm.
But she was, like, so good to me, and I was like, how do I tell her that? And so, you know, I called her, and I was like, I don't think it's a fit. And she was like, oh, yeah, I could have told you that. And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, I figured that if you thought that it was, we would find a way to make it work.
Oh.
And she was like, I don't think graduate school is your path.
Yeah, I didn't mean, what I meant was that when people have gone to graduate school, they have
all of that. And I was craving that, which I think is part of why I was like, well, I want to go. And she was like, I think there's another way. She's like, I just don't think that that's... She's like, honestly, the stuff that you're interested in isn't what most graduate schools want to be teaching. She's like, I think that half the programs out there right now, you've already got that part figured out. Yeah. She's like, don't accept anywhere without calling me if you get an offer. She's like,
Because it would be going backwards.
It would be going backwards. Right. And
you'd already gone too far to really benefit from what they had, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And so... So then I was like, okay, well, now what? And I was like, well, I never did do that assisting thing. And, you know, ended up getting in contact with somebody I'd known from Barrington, again, who happened to be out at La Jolla, and ended up doing a bunch of, have actually over the last several years done a bunch of assisting out there. And that was really great. It really gave me just a completely different perspective on how everything worked. And, assisting is also boring. You know, that's a theme here. Actually, a lot of my director friends were all like, oh my God, assisting is like that. It's not easy, you know? And fortunately, I assisted Jo Bonney a couple years ago on one of her shows, and she was like, if I could have assisted anybody, she was one of the people at the top of that list. And I remember having, one of the first times we had coffee together, she said something to the effect of, you learn the most when you're assisting when you disagree with what the director's doing. And she was really right. I mean, that was very much... It's that moment when you're watching somebody do something and you're like, well, I wouldn't do it that way. And it doesn't mean that they're doing it wrong, but it just means that you're finding your ways of solving those problems.
Right.
And I definitely think that I learned more by the things I disagreed with. Mm-hmm. You know, the things you agree with...
Okay. You know that.
Yeah, you know, like we're all on the same page here. You know, and I mean, there were definitely times where I think you almost learn more about the process, at least for me, than it was the actual directing. But, like, how do you direct a show in a big institution? I hadn't really worked on new plays then, and I knew I was interested in working on them. So learning about literally managing the process of new plays, like how do you distribute new pages, how do you communicate with a playwright, you know, that aspect of it was extremely informative. And
details.
Yeah, details and process and budgets and schedule management and, you know, because you just don't, there's no way to understand that unless you've seen that in process, I think. You know, and the first show I assisted on was Chaplin. So, I mean, it was like a large scale.
Oh, yeah.
A large scale show. So.
Yeah. Okay, so how did you wind up here?
How did I wind up here? So the year that I had this conversation with a woman about maybe I shouldn't go to graduate school, I applied for the Drama League Directors Fellowship, Directors Project Fellowship in New York. And I feel like I was having a really hard time with that application or something, and like I finished it all like really last minute and whatever, and was like, there's no way this is gonna happen. And then, you know, was thinking about leaving New York at that point, and was like, maybe I'll move to Minneapolis, and went to Minneapolis actually, and was like, I'll spend 3 or 4 months here, and got there and got an interview back in New York for the Drama League, and I was like, oh, well, okay. And so flew to New York and did that interview, and then found out I got the fellowship. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going back to New York then. And so funny. The Drama League, as far as young directors go, is probably, there's just nothing like it in New York. You know, they take you in, particularly for me, who had never had graduate school, like, there's still it probably will be for a very long time when I'm like, I need advice, you know, that...
So you finally found a community.
I found a bit of a community there, and I was really fortunate that the other directors my year were all really fabulous. I ended up in a pool of, I did with their fall fellowship, and I had a pool of 3 other female directors. So it was great because it was like all lady directors, and we were all like late 20s, early 30s, and, you know, from all over the place. And those ladies are just, they're going to like change American theater, I'm convinced. But so... you know, ended up finding sort of this home at the Drama League. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my work since then has been referrals there. The guest director last year was also a former fellow of the Drama League, and they're really good. I mean, it's a great place. Like, if you want a director, like, you just call them up.
So is that what happened?
Yeah,
Greg called them,
and like, they emailed me and were like, get in contact with him if you're interested in doing this. And I interviewed with Greg. It came through there.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the play.
Okay, so title of show, it's a musical about two guys writing a musical about two guys writing a musical. So when they were applying for a festival, they didn't have a name for this project, and the blank space said title of show. And they're like, wouldn't it be funny if we just called it title of show? And so that's how the show got its name. And it's a play about creating original art, you know, and how do you stay true to yourself through that process, you know, because it ultimately the show ended up on Broadway, and every time the show went to a new venue, they added that section of what happened in. So it mimics the real path.
Okay, good. So this thing has the feel of
the
truth, right?
Well, it has the feel of the truth and is based on their experience of actually writing the show. You know, there are moments where we will be in rehearsal and we'll be like, wait, did that part actually happen? And my stage manager will look it up and go, oh, yeah, this happened at this time, you know?
Uh-huh.
Or, but it's a mixture of it. But it really is based on the lives of these two guys who wrote the show and their two friends who helped them create it.
Wow. Okay, so I ask one other question.
Uh-huh.
You have spent the lion's share of your life in this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say something about what that's like?
It's really hard. I think that everything your parents warn you about is true, you know, and I think as I've gotten into my 30s, you know, what's important to you starts to shift, and it's a crazy thing to balance, but at the same point, somewhere after astrophysics, it really did become such a part of me that I don't know what life is like without it. And that can be a struggle because it's like, okay, well, every once in a while I'm like, well, maybe I should get out of the business or maybe I should, you know, but there's always that thing that no matter what happens, I'm always like, oh, I wonder what it would be like to make a show out of that. You know, that it becomes such an integral part of how you express who you are and you see the world. Like, I think I see everything that way, you know? A ridiculous thing happens, I'm like, can you imagine if we put that in a show? I always joke that they've started making a list in rehearsal of all of the things I really want to put in the production report at the end of the day, but that I don't. So I'll be like, last night, I was like, wouldn't it be amazing if there was a whole chorus of dancing playbills? That's never going to make it in there. Like, what if it rained glitter, you know? That it's sort of like I see everything that way, that everything is the potential for a show. Every place I go, I look at, and I'm like, well, what if we did a play there? You know, I think it becomes your lens for seeing the world. And so, you know, there's this struggle always, I think, as an artist, of balancing, you know, the responsible part of, like, I got to pay my bills with that part that you sometimes try to turn off that's like, must make art, must make art, must make art. That it's always there, and you know, maybe my teacher just saved me a few years of must make art, you know, by pushing me in that direction, because
yeah.
I don't know that impulse would have ever turned off.
No,
you know,
I find myself thinking this really bizarre thing. You could take the girl out of the business, but you can't take
it's true. It's so true, you know, and it's like I actually my dad lives up in Dunedin, so this is kind of like a cheater, like, I get to come to a show and see them. And he always said, he's like, child, you are so weird. You know? And I'm like, yeah, that's true. Probably a little bit true there.
But it is who you are.
Yeah, but it is who I am, you know.
It's a great place to stop.
Great.
Thank you so much, Amanda. And I can't imagine my life without it, because it is who I am. So, can you say that about your life? That whatever it is you're doing, you can't imagine your life without it? That it is actually who you are? Of course, that is the reason I do this show, to make this point that it is possible to know who you are and then to be it. It is possible to live a life in which you say, I can't imagine my life other. That this is
what I am at home doing, comfortable doing. She says her teacher may have saved her some time, but she's certain that this would always have been her path. This was always there, is always there, is the filter through which she sees her life. So again, The Lynn Show is about discovering if you have had to leave a part of yourself behind, if your childhood in some way forced you to deny some important aspect of yourself, and if you recognize that, if you want to try and get that back, that is not impossible. That which you have left behind is still there. Of course, that is why people go into therapy, to recover parts of themselves which they had been forced to deny, and so to live a life which is more congruent, to use the psychotherapist's term, more I don't have to pretend, I don't have to deny. I am myself, and that's all right with me, even if other people say I'm weird, even if other people don't understand it, even if other people are shocked or embarrassed or angry or jealous, I still can be me. Okay, that's the theme of The Lynn Show, and of course I play these interviews so that you can hear what it sounds like when you do it. And, of course, Amanda makes that point. And I'm hopeful that you heard that. And, again, if you feel that there's something that you left behind or were forced to deny, that you consider the possibility of recovering yourself. And so, as always, I sure hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that will bring you back. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And I sure hope you will be.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. From the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle.